relationship with God. And every living entity, every body, has the right to establish a relationship with the Lord. So God does not belong to any country, or any nation, or any religion as such. God belongs to everyone, and actually everything belongs to God, but God doesn't belong to anything. We cannot say that God is Hindu, Krishna is a Hindu God, or someone is a Christian God, or someone is a Muslim God. No, God is God. We cannot say that different religions have different gods. Actually, when you address God, when you talk about God, we address that one and that supreme person who is the controller of both this material and spiritual nature. And that supreme personality of Godhead is the creator of everything, he is the maintainer of everything, and in due course of time, he is the destroyer of everything. Of course, we do not delve much about the destruction part of it, because if we want to establish a loving relationship with God, then we have to be favorably disposed to him. Actually, if someone is very dangerous, we cannot love him. So this destructive and devastating form of the Lord does not invoke love in the hearts. So that's why we are not so concerned about Lord's destructive qualities. But we are concerned about him as the creator and the maintainer. God maintains everything. We are all being maintained by God. It is not that we are maintaining ourselves. It is not that our parents are maintaining ourselves. It is not that our governments are maintaining ourselves. No. It is God who is maintaining every one of us. Just consider, if there is no food, or forget about food, that is quite gross. Let's go to even something that is very easily available. Say, oxygen. Now, if there is no supply for oxygen for 5 minutes, what's going to happen to all of us? Can you maintain yourself with all your bank account? Can your parents maintain yourself? Can your friends maintain yourself? Can your government maintain yourself? No, no one can save you. And now, where is this supply coming from? Everything that we need is actually supplied by God. So that supreme personality, the supreme Lord, who is maintaining everyone, is God, and he does not belong to any nation or any sectarian religion or so and so forth. He belongs to everyone. He belongs to you as much as he belongs to me. And we all belong to him. In the Vedas, God has been through an analogy, God's universal aspect has been defined like, you see, the sun comes up. Say, sun comes up in the east. But that doesn't mean that sun belongs to the east. From east, sun moves towards west. And in due course of time, the sun gives its light to all the countries in the world. So no country can claim that sun belongs to us. If the sun rises first in India, can India claim that the sun actually belongs to us? No. The same way, when the sun rises in the sky of Austria, the people from Austria cannot claim that the sun now is Austrian sun. The same way, God actually belongs to everybody. And everybody has a loving relationship with God. And when we are established in that loving relationship with God, then we enjoy. Actually, we all want to enjoy. Is there anybody who doesn't want to enjoy? Please raise your hand. So you admit that there is no one who doesn't want to enjoy. Everybody wants to enjoy. But now if I ask you, are you fully satisfied with yourself? You all want to enjoy, but are you really enjoying? If I ask you honestly, let's see how many of you will raise your hands. There's no one who is fully satisfied. No one who is fully satisfied with his endeavor for enjoyment. You are fully satisfied. Okay, very good. Now, there is also a saying that there are two kinds of people, those who are fully satisfied. Huh? One is one who is situated in absolute knowledge, and the other is who is situated in absolute ignorance. Now I hope that you are enjoying in absolute knowledge, obviously. So yes, it's true, it is possible to be fully satisfied, it is possible to enjoy fully in this platform, provided we are situated in absolute knowledge. A person who is in absolute ignorance, he may also feel that he is enjoying. Like a person who is totally drunk, a person who is absolutely drunk, he thinks that he is enjoying, but actually you know that he is in ignorance, total ignorance. That's why it is said that ignorance is bliss, right? But ignorance is bliss not for the intelligent people. Ignorance is bliss for the fools. Those who are foolish, they think that it is blissful to be in ignorance. If we do not know anything, then obviously we feel some kind of happiness. If we are totally unaware, like when somebody is sleeping, in his deep sleep one has some kind of enjoyment. But that is not the kind of enjoyment that we are talking about. The enjoyment that we are talking about is the enjoyment out of absolute wisdom, absolute knowledge. So that knowledge comes from understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you get to know God, then you get to know the real identity of ourselves. And when you begin to love God, then we get the taste of real enjoyment, not otherwise. Generally, people in this material nature, they try to enjoy. How? They try to enjoy by eating all kinds of garbage. Apparently it seems to be very nice food, but actually it is, when one looks at it from the right perspective, then he can see that these are actually garbage. One enjoys out of taking intoxication, when one gets drunk, then he has some kind of enjoyment. Out of gambling, one gets some kind of enjoyment, and out of sex life, one gets some kind of enjoyment. But that enjoyment is not actually very sophisticated enjoyment. That is rather a crude kind of enjoyment. In the scriptures, it has been defined as the animalistic enjoyment. Like a lion enjoys by eating meat. Or a person in the street, he enjoys out of drinking wine or taking alcohol and so on and so forth. But these are not actually very sophisticated enjoyment. It's not a kind of enjoyment which is meant for advanced people. So the people, those who are situated in advanced intelligence, those who are aspiring for something higher accomplishment in their lives, they must aspire for spiritual enjoyment. We can notice that actually enjoyment is not an external factor. Enjoyment is actually an internal factor. We cannot say that although it seems that by external things there is some allurement or there is some promise for some kind of enjoyment, but that enjoyment is not the real enjoyment. It is a fleeting or illusory concept of enjoyment. Like somebody may think that by getting a nice big car, he is going to enjoy. Or possessing a nice big building, he is going to enjoy. Or by this kind of this kind of endeavor, they tries to enjoy, but actually that is not real enjoyment. Like we see, that we may feel that we, if we get a nice big car, then we're going to enjoy. But then, after a few days, we become sick and tired of that car. We may think that we may enjoy out of living in a nice big house, but then also that nice big house becomes old, and we lose the fascination for that house. One may think by possessing a nice beautiful woman, he is going to enjoy. But after a while he gets sick and tired of the woman. So many love affairs have ended in divorce, or what to talk about, brutal murders. So that way we see that the external endeavor for enjoyment does not really give us that enjoyment. The real enjoyment is internal. And deeper we go into ourselves, the more is the degree of our enjoyment. And in the innermost core of our hearts, the Lord is situated. And when we develop a loving relationship with the Lord, then we get the taste of real enjoyment. That is the supreme state of enjoyment. And when one gets the taste of that enjoyment, then he becomes disgusted with material enjoyment. He doesn't have any taste left whatsoever for material enjoyment. And the goal of human life is to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you want to enjoy, then aspire for real enjoyment. Why wasting your time in some kind of frivolous, meaningless pursuits for enjoyment, which does not really give you the enjoyment? Like, if you haven't been satisfied with your endeavor for enjoyment so far, then I think it's high time that you come to the conclusion that there is no enjoyment whatsoever. Actually, that's what Prabhupada told me when I met him for the second time. Prabhupada told me, all your life and even in your lives before, you have tried to enjoy so much, but still you are not satisfied. So why don't you just offer this life to serve Krishna and see what happens? And if it is successful, if you feel that yes, there is something by rendering service to Krishna, then it is very good. You have gained your life. You have properly utilized your life. And even if it is not successful, even if there is nothing in offering this life, even if nothing is accomplished by offering your life to Krishna, then what's the loss? Because just one life out of millions of lives. So after all, there is no loss. So it's worth its while to try it out. And when Prabhupada finished that, and actually not only Prabhupada told that, Prabhupada explained that how material enjoyment is not at all enjoyment. Prabhupada, one by one, he gave the example. And then finally he came to the sex life. And Prabhupada said, sex life is actually like the camel eating thorn. The camel eats thorn. And as the camel eats thorn, his mouth is torn into pieces. And he starts to bleed. And he gets the taste of his blood and he thinks, oh, how delicious these thorns are. So same way, one actually, in his sex dealings, he gives out the very essence, the very vitality of his life, the very essence of his body, and he thinks, oh, how relishable the sex life is. So an intelligent man will realize that actual enjoyment is not in getting involved in materialistic activities, but the real enjoyment is being involved in spiritual activities. And whatever one aspires for is available in spiritual life. Actually, we do not really lose anything, because in material, say, we give up four very gross materialistic activities. They are eating meat, taking intoxication, gambling, and illicit sex. These are the four things that we give up. But actually we give these things up in exchange of their spiritual counterpart. And the spiritual counterpart is, like, we give up eating meat, but we fill our stomach and with delicious Krishna prasad, the remnants of foods that have been offered to the Lord. Then we give up intoxication, but we become intoxicated with the holy name of the Lord. By chanting the glories of the Lord, it's so intoxicating that once you get the taste of it, you see how you get higher and higher without coming down. And then gambling is to stake something for some higher gain. Like you gamble, you pay 5 shillings and you think that you are going to get 5 million shillings. That is gambling. Like, let me stake 5 or 50 or whatever it is for the sake of a bigger profit, bigger gain. And we are also gambling with our life. We offer our life to Krishna, and in exchange we want to get Krishna. We offer our life to God, and in exchange we get God. We stake our life, or we can, in simple words, we can say that we stake our material life for the sake of our spiritual life. We offer our material life, and in exchange we get our spiritual life. This can be understood only by when one offers himself to Krishna. And the counterpart of sex life is the loving relationship with the Lord. Actually, everybody wants to love. But in a material platform, nobody knows who to love and how to love. This love actually is the spirit soul's eternal craving to become related to the Lord. Love is actually meant for the Lord. So everybody, every living entity is craving. Every living entity has a very intense craving in the heart to develop a relationship with the Lord. And that is called love. But since we have forgotten God, since we have forgotten the Lord, that's why we do not know where to project our love. And that's why we are trying to project our love into different material objects. And that's why our love is constantly frustrated in the material platform. A young boy thinks that he will love some young girl and he'll be happy. But in the beginning he feels that this girl is my life and soul. This girl is everything for me. But as they come closer and closer and closer, he gets more and more and more disgusted. And then finally, both of them get into a big fight and they scream at each other, "I don't stand your sight. I can't even stand your sight. Get the hell out of here." And that's how these so-called loving affairs end in this material platform. But that never happens when you begin to love God. Like, I have been trying to love Krishna for last 10 years. And still now I'm disgusted. On the other hand, as the time is passing, I am becoming more and more attracted to Him. And I can see that how the Lord reciprocates our love. When we love God, God doesn't just take our love and do not give us an exchange. No, God reciprocates. Love's fulfillment is in reciprocation. When both the parties exchange love for each other, that is the ultimate culmination or fulfillment of love. And that is perfectly manifest in our loving relationship with God. When, as it is, even before we loved God, the God is actually showering His love upon us. Although we deny God, we do not accept Him, we are totally unconcerned about Him, but still, God is very much concerned about us and He is giving us everything that we need. As I was pointing out, like, He gave us everything. He gave us the food to eat, water to drink, air to breathe, what to talk about other things. So the Lord supplies everything that we need. So that is His love for us. So although we did not love Him, but still He loves us. And as we begin to love Him, then we become aware of the fact how much He loves us. And then we begin to appreciate it. That, oh my Lord, you have given me so much. You have given me so much. And as we begin to love Him, He also showers His love upon us. And then as I was telling you before, like when we offer ourselves fully unto Him, then He also offers Himself fully unto us. And that's why it is so wonderful to have a loving relationship with the Lord. And those who are already engaged in loving the Lord, they, I'm sure, are experiencing that joy. And those who are not as yet engaged in loving the Lord, I would humbly request you that why don't you please give yourself a chance? Why don't you please try to love God and see what happens? See how you feel. That when you are hungry and you get some food to eat, then you yourself feel how satisfying it is. So the same way I will request you that you are hungry for love, your love hasn't been satisfied so far, so now why don't you please begin to love the Lord and see whether you get that satisfaction that you're hankering for so many years. What to talk about so many years, so many lifetimes. And if you want to go further, the books are there, which are the basis of this knowledge. The devotees are here, those who are practicing this knowledge, and if you have any doubt, they will clarify your doubts. And they are actually your real friends. So please give this a serious consideration and see for yourself what you benefit out of it. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question pertaining to today's discussion? No question. Harvey, do you have any question? What's that? Do you have any question?
No.
What's your name?
Kamal.
I see. Do you come here often?
Sometimes.
I see. What do you do?
I'm practicing Raja Yoga.
Oh, I see. Why are you wasting your time?
Don't waste any time, sorry.
Well, you see, when a child does something wrong, then his guardians tell him that why are you doing this? Why are you wasting your time? The child also says, no, I'm not wasting my time. But he doesn't see how he's wasting his time. In Bhagavad Gita, the 9th chapter is entitled as Rajavidya, which means the king of knowledge. And the real Raja Yoga is the service to Krishna. Did you read Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
Did you read the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita?
Yes.
What does it deal with?
Sorry, I don't know the Gita okay. by heart.
Okay, so the 6th chapter, Krishna is describing the process of yoga. Right? Or as you say, Raja Yoga. And after describing the process of this yoga system, at the end of the chapter, Krishna is saying, Yoginam upi sarvesham madgate nam taratmanaha shraddhavan bhajate jomam same yukta tamumataha. The process yoga means to be linked up with the Lord. And Krishna is telling, after describing the yoga system, he is saying that out of all the yogis, yoginam api sarvesham, madgatenam taratmanaha, shraddhavan bhajate jomam, one who is rendering devotional service unto me with love and devotion, he is to be considered as the greatest of all yogis. Right? So that's why I was saying that consider it as a waste of time, because if you have some higher thing to accomplish and if you can accomplish it very easily, then why take a difficult process? And you know, you want to know further why I'm saying it's a waste of time. Because you cannot practice yoga sitting in a city like Vienna. The first criterion of yoga is that this process of Ashtanga yoga, you have to leave the human association and you have to go to a solitary place.
I'm sorry that I interrupt you, but it's not the kind of Raja Yoga which Patanjali is teaching.
Yes, I know. That is then what kind of Raja Yoga is that?
It's a called Sahesh Raja Yoga. It means easy Raja Yoga, which is also...
Well, the thing is that I was...
It can also be practiced in the city whilst performing a job, because it is to love God.
Well, now, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You see, the process of yoga involves this, if you consider it in that light, it involves detaching oneself from matter and situate oneself in spirit. Right? So when you are so much disturbed by all these material phenomena, it is not practically possible to detach yourself unless and until you accept the process of rendering devotional service to the Lord. Right? Because, you see, the concept of Ashtanga Yoga or, you know, Raja Yoga or whatever you want to call it, right? That is a process of mechanically detaching oneself from material attachments. Right? The yogas have 8 different stages. Yam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahar, Dhyan, Dharan and Samadhi. Right? And all these processes are actually gradually detaching oneself from the material attachments. Right? Now, if you are situated in the materialistic activities, your mind is constantly torn by all these material allurements, then no matter whoever comes and tells me that he is practicing that process of detachment, staying in the in a very, very degraded situation, then at least with my intelligence, I can conclude that it is just a waste of time.
Sorry, but I agree to you with the, when you say that it's a waste of time with all these sorts of physical detachment, like all these Hatha yogis do with pranayama and everything of this aspect, but it's not the way I detach myself.
How do you detach yourself?
I detach myself in this way that I consider myself a soul. What performing every act means that I am conscious that I use my physical instrument as a vehicle or as an instrument, but I am the one who does this, that tiny point of life, that soul.
Well, I mean, what the thing is, you know, it's pointless getting into... I don't want to attack you or, you know. But, you know, like, let's put it this way, ultimately, that from now on, become very honest with yourself and consider yourself very seriously. That are you honestly making any advancement in that direction? Just, you know, try it from now on. And, you know, you become your own judge. Right? And if you feel that it is not, you are not really making any advancement, then I will suggest that pick up this book, Bhagavad Gita as it is by Prabhupada, and just read it sincerely. Right?
I have it at home.
Yeah, but you haven't read it.
I did read it.
So thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. And please come again. Well, I forgot to ask you. Did you come for the first time?
I guess so.
Oh, you guess so, I see. You didn't come before. Is this the first time here?
It was the others.
Oh, I see.
But it was here.
Oh, I see. Please come again. On Sundays we have feast here.